If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, the Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. We are broadcasting from the podcast bunker in an undisclosed location.
From the podcast bunker past.
Yeah.
As we attempt to build a runway into a future of shows that we can't possibly predict.
It seems more and more uncertain. I don't know. Every podcast is probably doing this episode, right? Like, people are going to be sick to death.
Let's talk about what we're doing episode. Yeah, we should save it for the live stream. Self-importance is a quality that I lack completely and reject. Mm. Like, full stop.
Wow. You must be so proud of yourself for that.
You got me. But you can't ignore how often we're hearing things like any attempt to hold on to a normal life right now has a greater value than it's ever had before. And so we're hearing from a lot of friends of DeSoto about just how important this work is. And I'm not making light of its significance in anyone else's life, but wow, it sure feels that way.
I feel strange about how many people I know whose lives have really downshifted and how much this feels like the work for us is business as usual. Like
the full
week of prepping, editing, recording, posting, all of that. Like, nothing has really changed about what we do. I'm hoping that that's a nice continuity for the listeners, because it does feel a little bit like the alienation that we elected to take on for ourselves in being weirdos who work from home. It had a really different feeling before than it does now.
It's like we invented penicillin by just letting our lives rot in the fridge.
But we're like penicillin hipsters, like, oh yeah, I was into penicillin before it was like really big, you know? It seems like a lot of these cases are totally asymptomatic.
Yeah. My wife's positive that she's going to get it.
Yeah.
Your wife feels the same. You feel the same. I feel the same.
Yeah.
There's no denial about that.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing I've seen in the press about how to behave is to behave like you already have it and do everything you can not to give it to other people.
Right.
It's not so much about preventing yourself from getting it as preventing others from getting it. And I'm doing my best, but I was in line at the grocery store wearing I got these like white cotton gloves. And the primary function of these gloves is to, like, when I like reach my hand up to dig in my eye for eye boogers, I'm like, oh, there's cloth on my finger and I'm not supposed to be touching my face right now. And it's just like, it's just a little like mental speed bump to be like, oh yeah,
sure.
No touching face right now.
Yeah.
And then when I get home, I take them off and I wash my hands.
Uh-huh.
But the lady at the grocery store was like doing bits on me because...
That's what you deserve.
Yeah. Because it does look a little silly. It looks like I'm a mime.
It looks like you're there to check for dust.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm Admiral Kirk inspecting the Enterprise before a little educational outing with the cadets.
You're the not so secret shopper, Ben. I can see you coming a mile away.
Yeah. I had a friend go to a memorial service on Zoom conference.
Oh no.
Yeah.
We need whoever that is to mute their microphone. We're trying to eulogize.
Can you imagine next season's Curb Your Enthusiasm?
That's what I've been saying. It's going to be one of the greatest seasons of all time.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, enough about this bummer-ass topic. Why don't we get into this very light and silly episode of Deep Space
Nine? Let's pivot to distraction.
Yeah.
That's going to be great. As we talk about Deep Space Nine Season 6, Episode 7, you are cordially invited.
Realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Dump out the tapestries, Ben.
Dump them out.
Because the fleet has returned.
Yeah, the station is back in Federation hands. It's going to be where the Ninth Fleet is stationed, which mm-hmm. I like. Deep Space Nine, Ninth Fleet, makes sense.
I follow.
Yeah. Keep that 7th fleet over there at Deep Space 7.
7! One of the key pieces of Sisko's log is how jovial he is about the total and complete absence of belt buckles on the station. They all got left behind on Starbase 200 and something.
Yeah, still at war, but the celebratory mood has not abated for a week now, which is pretty cool.
Everybody's fucking. So much fucking.
It's not just banners getting dumped out. It's dongs. It's boobs. It's everything.
I read that there was a cutscene to this episode for the move-in. Like, everyone goes to their quarters and sees who's been living there.
Really?
Yeah, and one of the funniest bits of writing I thought was that you get the person who moves back in and Weyoun had stayed there, and then someone moves into where Dukat had lived, and they're all like a growing level of gross and bombed out.
Change leaders smells like cat pee.
And Nog moves into his quarters and realizes it's Jake that's been living there, and it's the worst one by far. That scene should have stayed. That's really funny.
That's too bad. Yeah. We get the scene where Sisko greets Major Kira up in Ops. She's very glad to have him back, glad to not be greeting Gul Dukat every time her boss comes in the morning. It made me wonder what the status is of the non-aggression pact between Bajor and the Dominion.
Right?
Because it seems like that was a pretty good way of keeping Bajor from being destroyed, but doesn't this mean Bajor would return to being subject to Dominion attack?
It's a little awkward.
Also, anything stopping another fleet of Dominion ships from coming through the wormhole? Or is the wormhole just closed for business for a little while?
I think they should continue to drive Deep Space Nine around. Like, I think it should be on patrol along with the Ninth Fleet, going back and forth between the hole and Bajor.
Wow.
It can do that.
You want it to be like the Hood, just hauling its butt back and forth between star bases.
I really do. Why not? Couldn't the Ninth Fleet make a sort of chain?
Oh, yeah.
Between the two?
Just there's always a ship nearby.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That would make sense.
Yeah. This is the Worf is getting married episode, and we're going to have a lot of Martok in this. And the first scene with Martok is him being promoted to the Supreme Command of the Ninth Fleet or something, which I guess is a combined Federation-Klingon fleet by implication.
Oh, I didn't get the sense that he had any sort of oversight on the Federation side.
I'm wondering, man, because
Supreme Commander suggests a supremacy of command.
Right, yeah. It's like Eisenhower in World War II kind of a deal, where you can boss the British around also.
Right.
But Martok's position is so squishy. It's like, is he just the captain of the Rotoran, or is he like the head of the entire Klingon military? Is he Gowron's best friend, or is he just one of many similarly ranked guys?
I like that Martok's like, they offered me the beast. But I turned it down because I prefer the Rotorad.
You should have seen the quarters they offered me and what the Jem'Hadar had done to it. People think they don't poop, but they do.
Let me just say that the white looks very suspicious under a black light when doing a quarters inspection.
You've seen what a trap house looks like. Those guys were totally strung out. They weren't looking after the hygiene.
I love how Martok is like lamenting the administrative work that comes with his promotion.
Yeah.
And Sisko is relishing this as a finally... You know what it's like to have an inbox with 2,000 email messages in it.
Yeah, the paperwork does not go well.
Yeah.
Rotoran.
But in this conversation, they sort of hash out like where the personnel are going, because this gives the fleet an opportunity to regroup.
Right.
So Martok's like, well, I'm thinking I'm going to keep Worf aboard. He's been pretty great. And I guess that means Alexander's part of that deal. And then sort of tosses out some extremely faint praise about Alexander and what it's like to have him.
Yeah.
He's not the best soldier I've ever seen.
As far as soldiering goes, he's essentially worthless, but he is Worf's son.
He makes a fine human shield. I mean Klingon shield.
Hard to tell with that guy. TBQH.
They, like, as they're making fun of him, they directly cut to him being really lame.
Like, self-deprecation, it's got this weird kind of reverse uncanny valley where if the person actually totally sucks,
yeah,
it stops being cute.
Exactly.
So when he is telling a story about something he fucked up on the ship, it's like, yeah, like, you are a danger to yourself and others.
He has no chill and he has no self-awareness.
Yeah.
And his story isn't funny for so many reasons. Like, he floods an entire deck with a dangerous chemical.
Yeah.
That's not a funny story.
Yeah. I wouldn't
tell
even...
me about the time that the replicator wouldn't stop shooting out Gah. That's fun.
I wouldn't trust him to go back to the bar and refill my blood wine.
No, I wouldn't either.
Why not?
Quark is also here in Quark's bar and interested in pitching Worf and Dax on an urgent wedding at Quark's bar. I guess he just needs to fill in some of the economic gaps that the rapid political shifts of the station have maybe left him.
He's as aware as anyone of the wedding industrial complex and all the many benefits that can provide for a business person.
He can charge like four times what he would charge for a normal gathering of that size.
Worf is like, fuck that. We are not getting married in a dive bar. Forget it.
The ceremony will take place on the Klingon home world after the war.
I feel like there are definitely two or three seasons of Cheers where people discuss either having their wedding reception or their actual wedding at Cheers. And it's like, boy, like, we talk about Star Trek straining credulity occasionally, but the idea that these people all spend like 4 or 5 hours a day at this bar and then are also interested in using it as their wedding venue.
So an interesting bit of business happens here when Alexander gets up and Quark hot seats his bar stool. It's that we come to find out that Alexander is being transferred. And so in order to get a jump on that, in order to be able to have a wedding where the maximum amount of family and friends could attend,
yeah,
it starts to make more and more sense that they would have the wedding on DS9.
Sooner rather than later. I think that Worf is doing the math like this. This kid is not surviving this war, so if we want him there, we're going to have to do it now.
They're also extremely close, having not talked to each other for many, many years. Certainly closer than the entire crew of the Enterprise, who I guess don't receive invitations to this.
Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty cold.
The wedding scene at the beginning of Nemesis feels so much more wedding-y than the wedding scene in this episode.
And why is that? It's because all of our friends and family are there.
Yeah, it's because the people that actually love Worf,
they don't even try to remove the idea with dialogue. It's just ignored in an effort to hope you forget.
I wonder if that's a budgetary constraint. Like, oh, if we like get a cameo from the entire cast of that very successful and beloved TV show, it's going to cost a zillion dollars? Or is it one of the things they talk about in the documentary, What We Left Behind, is how Deep Space Nine always felt like the middle child of Star Trek. And maybe there were like sensitivities among the actors, like not wanting to share screen space with cast members of a more successful and more beloved show. I don't know.
There was an attempt to get the TNG crew involved in a totally dialogue-free cameo kind of way. But what happened was only LeVar Burton and Jonathan Frakes had offices on the Paramount lot, so they were game.
Yeah.
But everyone else, they would have had to fly in from all over.
Yeah.
And the costs associated with bringing everyone in and getting them uniformed and like, it just wasn't going to happen. It couldn't pencil out.
Not this time.
Bullshit, man.
I feel like you maybe like ask the network for a little extra money for something like that because I don't know. I guess maybe it's hard to know, right? Because this is meant to be sort of a light palate cleanser episode after a huge bracing story arc.
But it's also supposed to be an event.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And it really helps the event like special nature of the thing to invite people that you didn't expect to be there.
Yeah.
That should be there.
Yeah. I wish we'd gotten that episode. I'm sure there are lots and lots of really good reasons why we didn't, but
I wish I got to know that episode of Deep Space Nine. Worf invites Alexander to be his Taiwan-on, which is sort of a bestman invitation. And then Alexander immediately turns into the Gerald Ford impression from Saturday Night Live and goes full physical with his comedy.
Yeah. Golden Carton. Golden Carton. So we get a little conversation with Kira and Dax about why is Dax converting to Klingon for this wedding? You know, why not meet in the middle
right,
or whatever? And kind of becomes clear that Worf is a bit of a groomzilla. And, you know, Dax is able to kind of rationalize this away. Like, I've had a lot of, you know, Trill wedding ceremonies. I've had him as a man. I've had him as a woman. Been there, done that, bought the T-shirt. But this is something that
I've been both at the same time. Like you've taken the ankylosaur out of me and put me into the other person on the wedding day.
Yeah. We got married as we died and also passed off our ankylosaur.
Wow.
Have you ever been married in stirrups?
So she is basically doing the entirely Klingon version. So the B storyline is going to be sort of Dax as Charlotte in Sex and the City trying to convert to Judaism, while the C storyline is going to be Kira sees Odo several times and Odo slinks away.
Which one is more interesting to you?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's a bit of a misfire with Dax that she wouldn't be just perfect at this, given how much she's been perfect at kind of assimilating into other Klingon things over the course of the series.
I was shocked at how time was jumped through in this episode in a couple of places.
Yeah.
This, I would never have guessed that the Klingon wedding episode would have been the 10 pounds of episode in a 5-pound bag situation.
it really
ends up being that way.
Yeah. And it also made me wish that there was some more discussion of comparing it to the initiation she underwent to become a host.
Yeah.
Because it really felt like there were some parallels to be drawn there that didn't really get explored.
So in the wardroom, Worf has brought together his bachelor party McLaughlin group.
If you want.
Where he describes the Kal Haya, the 4-night bachelor party that he wants O'Brien, Bashir, Sisko, and Martok to attend, along with Alexander.
I've never been to a bachelor party that I would characterize as being a path of clarity. But that's apparently how the Klingons roll.
I've been to some that you could call depraved. And deprivation is first base. People seem to be excited about this in a way that if they knew anything about Klingon culture, they should instead be apprehensive or scared.
Yeah. It's a misdirect that the audience is coming a mile away and wonders why a room with Captain Sisko, Miles O'Brien, and super genius Julian Bashir are shocked by.
This is the one scene where you really feel the absence of the Enterprise crew, because you look around this table and you're like,
these are your best friends?
Yeah, especially Bashir.
Right.
I don't understand the Bashir thing at all. Like, I guess you lobotomized my brother. Therefore, you are one of my closest friends.
Bashir says to Worf on his way out, like, we're going to drink till we can't see straight. We're going to be brain dead at the end of this. And Worf says, if you were any other man, I would kill you where you stand.
Worf is like, blood wine? Bashir's like, no, I brought my own beverage. Why is your keg warm?
Yeah, we've got our keg in a giant Rubbermaid full of ice, and you've got yours in a giant Rubbermaid that you keep pouring boiling water into.
Bashir's pumping, and it's just foam. It's just foam into the keg cup.
That was the pale ale, Julian.
So we're told and not shown initially what Dax is going to go through, because there's a conversation that Martok and Sisko have wherein they're going to go greet Martok's arriving wife.
Yeah.
And Martok's wife is there to take Dax through her version of what these 4 days will be.
Sirella, daughter of Linkasa, has real She Who Is My Wife vibes, but she also has real Sarek vibes, where yeah. She's like the highest status person in any room she walks into.
Yeah.
But she's dressed like She Who Is My Wife.
She's an angry Laxana Troy, right?
She is. Yeah. But she is not going to put up with a dress full of Odo.
No, not at all. And she positively big dogs Martok when she arrives in an old school big dogging kind of way.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I love his reaction. I love how sprung he is for her.
Oh, yeah. He loves that shit.
They're doing one of those marriages where they have separate domiciles and just fuck like bunny rabbits when they see each other, but they don't see each other that much.
You know, Sisko, you should really get your own ball kicking machine for recreational use.
I find that it really sharpens the mind. Even as it dulls the penis.
But you meet Sirella, and all of a sudden you're concerned with Dax. You may be more concerned with what's going to happen to Dax than you are with this bachelor party of part-time Klingons, right?
Indeed. I was also a little concerned for Sisko, because when she walks away, Martok sort of asks Sisko to weigh in on how hot he thinks his wife is.
Magnificent, isn't she?
That's not cool.
I don't want any of my friends to tell me their opinions on my wife's looks.
No. No matter how often you ask, I'll never tell you, Ben.
I appreciate that about you. I mean, I'm going to keep asking you to test you.
Right. Later on, Dax lights candles in her quarters. You get the sense that Dax knows what's coming. She's not unprepared for the ceremony or the sequence of events, but I think she is unprepared for who is there to administer them.
Yeah, I mean, like meeting the mother-in-law, the future mother-in-law is always an intense moment.
Mm-hmm.
You want it to go right. You want to make a good first impression. But there are some kind of mitigating circumstances here. There being a war on, it wasn't possible for Dax to get the exact perfect kind of candle. So she got cheap replicator knockoffs. And Worf is really worried about this.
You clearly got those candles at the Yankee Candle Store on the promenade.
The scents remind me of designer imposter.
This is a great moment for Sirella, because I feel like the big dog hat trick is in range for her here. She big dogs Worf into getting the fuck out.
Yeah.
Leave.
I want to say, like, when I heard we were going to meet Martok's wife, I was like, we're going to see maybe the most elaborate boob window in the history of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And she is a boob windowless Klingon.
I don't like it.
I don't either.
I'm just going to say that.
It seems wrong and bad. Now more than ever, we need the boob window.
I mean, her costuming flies in the face of everything we've come to know about Klingon women up until now.
Yeah, she's throwing it all away, Adam.
You know what? I'm looking at the bottom of a Memory Alpha page, and I'm seeing a picture of Sirella, and the caption is, "Klingon women hate her for this one secret." So I think I could guess what the secret is.
Oh, I think you're looking at the Taboola options at the bottom of that page there. which saved you a click.
Right.
Yeah, Worf's like, this is not traditional enough shit is peak Worf. And then getting his balls busted by Sirella, like, kicks it up even another notch. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
She's a real Remain Klingon type.
Sirella does that thing where she walks in, drops her bomb, and then leaves. The bomb being, shit's gonna go down in the morning. Prepare yourselves. And also, get rid of all these bullshit candles.
Yeah. Like, Worf talks to Martok about this. Martok is like, yeah, good luck with this. Like, we'll see if this wedding happens. Sirella is full disco-era Kalesh follower.
It's a sensibility about Klingons and their culture that feels very home in the Star Trek Discovery universe.
Yeah.
The xenophobia and all that?
Yeah, we can't have aliens come into our house, and if we do, they're going to be like third-class alien citizens.
The alien trash of the galaxy.
Not considered equals. Like, Dax is being held to a much higher standard than she would be if she was a Klingon woman. I got the feeling.
Do you think it's a little fuck that Martok had to know how this was going to go down? And none of this should be a surprise to Martok, and yet he does not soften the blow of his wife arriving in any way for either of them.
He's not preparing Worf for the worst.
You know, Worf Zia will not be an easy sell for any of us.
Worf even asks, like, hey, should maybe I go talk to your wife? Which also another just amazing question being asked in this episode.
That depends. Do you find her attractive? Martok, why are you asking everyone that?
Why do you keep wanting to know if people think your wife is, quote, boneable, unquote? We cut to the Kalhaya cave ceremony, which is simulated in the Holo Suite. And it's very hot in there. It's kind of a sweat house environment.
Mm-hmm.
The smokiness in this scene, I think, kind of confounded the video compression, because there's a wide shot with Bashir, O'Brien, Alexander, and Sisko standing there. And I don't know if you had this experience, but on my TV, I could not see any of the characters that well. I could just, you know, by shapes figure out who Sisko, Alexander, and O'Brien were, but I swore that I was looking at Jake as the fourth.
For some reason, Jake?
For some reason, and I was like, wow, if for some reason Jake is involved in this after he wasn't involved in the previous scene about this, that is going to be some wild shit. But then he like walked a little closer to the camera and I was like, oh, right, it's Bashir.
I thought for sure you were going to say you couldn't tell the difference between the smoke in your room and what you were seeing on screen.
I was chiefing a giant blunt at the time.
Step one at any Kalhaya. You got to distribute the American Gladiator style joust sticks, right?
Yeah, you got to get ready to joust. And this is it's sort of like the flower baby of the Klingon wedding ceremony.
Oh,
also.
Oh, right. You got to hold on to your stick.
Got to hold on to your stick until the bond is made at the wedding, and then you go attack the groom and the bride with it. In a lot of ways, the bachelor party isn't over until the marriage is in place.
It's really the joust sticks of Damocles for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, speaking of things you don't want, they also find out that this is a 4-day fast.
Oh, no.
And there's a huge spread. There's a big buffet laid out, and this is maybe the only nod to Kern, Worf's beloved lost brother in the episode. One of the items on the buffet is turkey legs, which Alexander immediately goes and picks up. So there must be something genetic at play here. Like, the sons of Moog love a turkey leg.
I'm so fucking sad right now about Kern not being able to attend his brother's wedding. Like, I'm legit upset about it.
They should have just, like, come up with some pretext and had whatever his new identity is, just had him there, like, I was working as a baggage inspector at Kronos International Airport. Why have I been brought to this space station?
to attend a stranger's kalhaya. Dead bird meat with caviar on it. Do I like this? I do not know. I'm having what the French call déjà vu eating this. I could have sworn I've experienced this flavor combination before.
We've seen uncomfortable moments in Star Trek before, but try to imagine Kern walking through the door of the Holo Suite and cutting to Bashir's face. I'm pretty sure that would be the first cringe death ever depicted on... No, you know what? The helmsman that died when the Gilum killed him in the seat? That's the first cringe death.
Yeah.
Bashir's death in this moment would be second place.
I have a slightly different theory. I think Kern would show up, you would see Bashir's face blanch, and then you would see his uniform start to get wet below the waist, and then you would see him like quickly find a vessel to capture the fear piss he was taking. Nothing tastes quite like fear piss.
And you, let me have a sip of your blood wine. Your wine has gone bad.
So, six trials of Kalhaya, then. Deprivation, blood, pain, sacrifice, anguish, and amazing sexual donkey.
Well, Mr. Thompson, that's really quite a list. And you're right.
All of those crucial
yeah.
to any four-day event.
I guess so.
What are you doing? Mind what you're doing now?
Exactly.
So we cut to Quark's, and for some reason Jake walks in and tells Quark the Federation News Service is going to distribute the book that he wrote during the occupation.
Yeah, all those dispatches that he was not able to get out while the Dominion was there have been picked up by FNN, right? Was that what it was called in Star Trek, Picard?
Yeah.
FNN. Because they don't have cables in the future.
He's there ostensibly to look for his dad, which is never a place we find Ben Sisko.
Yeah, Ben Sisko's not a barfly, traditionally.
I'm racking my brain thinking about when there's ever been a scene of him and Quark's drinking alone.
Yeah. When you live on a space station where your dad wears a comm badge and can be located by the computer at any time, walking around asking people where your dad is has got to be the answering your phone hello of the future. So Jake's just a little old-fashioned.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. Quark is mildly impressed / interested in what Jake has to say, but he's basically there to tell him that he should check the Holo Suites because that's where his dad is. He's doing Klingon bachelor party.
And in those suites, Alexander is having an experience that I found very familiar, the almost passing out because it's too hot.
Right.
He chooses to power through and not take the coward's way out of turning the thermostat down a little bit. There's a lot of Klingon chauvinism at play here, right? Like Martok keeps saying things like, perhaps you will not succeed at the challenges the way we do because we are Klingons. And it's always Alexander having the most trouble.
My favorite thing about being married to Sirella is being her little spoon. She suffocates me with her warmth. Very difficult to sleep with Sirella.
But I like a challenge.
I love when they break into folk songs and Martok takes the high harmonies.
That was really good.
I love it so much.
Yeah. Just by saying I
love you. It's always a delight when you get together with a group and sing songs and you realize, oh shit, someone's a very good singer.
Yeah.
I'm suddenly very self-conscious about my bad singing. Please do not pimp me into a killer song.
Right. Yeah, just knowing how to harmonize, I always admire in somebody. But also, like, knowing your own register.
Yeah.
Like, it took me till I was, like, 34 or something before somebody was like, yeah, Ben, you have a low voice. Sing sing a little bit lower than you think you should sing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, I can actually hit notes when I sing happy birthday, like happy birth. Like if I start there, I'm going to be fine.
That's where you start.
But it's like, I thought I had to start where everybody else started.
I sung the high harmony to happy birthday at a birthday party that you and I both attended a while back.
I was going for the low notes.
Felt good. I think we both did our jobs.
We did our jobs.
Yeah.
I was the bass. You were the alto. Uh-huh.
We took off our straw hats and did the little tambourine shake with them at the end.
Yeah. I broke into a little beatboxing at one point. Uh-huh. It was really fun.
It was appreciated by no one but us. Much like our dueling birthday toasts.
Oh, man. I did feel a little bit... We were at this group birthday party right before the, like, portcullis closed on all socialization.
Right.
And at the dinner, the toasts kept going around, and you and I just turned our toasts into a relentless, like, dead air style bit where we tried to lull each other into a false sense of security that one of us was just going to be doing an earnest toast.
That was the best part, is we started sincere every time and then and then turned the toast wheel hard into the ditch.
I could tell that our wives were falling rapidly out of love with us, and our friend was getting ready to stop tolerating our presence at his party.
That's why we're invited to so few things. All I
do is bits. No matter what, you're always doing
bits. No matter
what, you're always doing
bits.
I was doing bits.
Bad bit moment.
It was a fun challenge, and people. Somebody that likes a challenge on this show is Jedzia Dex.
Yeah. She's gone sleeveless.
Yeah. She's getting a lot of shit for her sloppy brazier placement from Sorella.
What mean that word?
Because she's holding the braziers and she has to place them.
Oh, I was thinking we were talking about her bra, and that's and you had pronounced brazier.
I did not. I was pronouncing brazier. Brazier.
I was very confused.
The phrase sloppy brazier placement is in the episode and really jumped out at me.
The placement of the braziers on their pedestals is sloppy.
Right. Both of us are just standing over this joke, just beating it. We've seen this in scenes on the show before. Anytime you are asked to hold things out from your body for any length of time, you know that that is being asked many, many times. And no matter how heavy or light the object you're meant to hold, it is extremely difficult.
Yeah.
And whether or not this is acting on the part of Terry Farrell's, she looks like she's in great pain doing this. And I believe she is.
Yeah. There's no way to make those two things less than like 2 or 3 pounds, even if you make them out of very thin plastic.
Right.
But even that would be a big challenge if you're doing 20 takes in one day.
Sorella does that thing with Dax that Mike Myers does to the Chris Farley character in Wayne's World 2.
End this now, Jadzia. Go back to your own people.
I got no place else to go.
Just like sort of goads her into quitting.
Yeah.
This is what she's built for, what Sorella right here.
Right. I think this comes in the history recitation portion of the challenge, which is Dax is supposed to tell Sorella the history of the women in her family. Like, I could see Sorella giving Dax the history and then, like, pop quiz, like, you know, my 23rd grandmother, what was her name and what was her relationship to the emperor? But it's the opposite. It's Dax telling Sorella all this information and also like dropping some knowledge bombs. Like Dax has fact checked some of the family history and found some holes in it.
Sorella didn't know that she was on Finding Your Roots. And Dax is playing the part of Henry Louis Gates Jr. And it is not a fun, lighthearted episode.
You are not 100% Irish, and in fact, you're a quarter Jewish.
No!
It appears your great-great-great-grandparents sired many slaves. This is a great moment because this is when Dax big dogs Sorella.
Yeah, Sorella's pedigree is a sham.
Yeah.
And like you would think that this would maybe put them on a little bit more even footing, but it does not. The mother-in-law conflict does not go well.
Back on the promenade, for some reason, Jake chats up Kira about a party Dax is having. And, ugh, this was tough because Kira does that thing that can sometimes backfire because she invites someone to a party that isn't hers.
Sure, you're welcome. And you can tell Nog the same goes for him, too.
Great.
She invites, for some reason, Jake and Nog to this party. And then the second in a series of this type of scene happens. She sees Odo and, like, immediately whips around, turns away. They can't look at each other.
Yeah. It's a rule of threes, so we know that they're going to talk the next time she sees Odo.
But what's great about the physicality of this is that the turn away means a turn toward the Klingon bachelor party leaving and, I guess, taking a break. Like, yeah. They're walking through the promenade on the other side.
Yeah. It's a bit of a shame because I liked the idea of Kira having a moment of embarrassment and vulnerability in front of, for some reason, Jake.
Yeah.
Because that's just kind of a weird mixture of characters for a moment like that.
Right.
And
it's infinite characters and infinite combinations. That's what we like about Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. But they kind of like wrote their way out of having to process that at all by having the bachelor men walk through.
I wish we had a little better grasp on what steps we're on in the six.
Yeah.
Like we very clearly see the first two or maybe three, but then we totally lose the thread.
Yeah.
On the
mile markers
are
missing.
And I expected the B story to more comport with the six steps than even the A story would.
Right.
Like by the time we get to sacrifice or anguish, you know what? Maybe those can be things that
are similar to what Dax is going through.
Yeah. And I think she does a little bit, but you don't draw straight lines between them.
While the pain is being experienced by the dudes in the cave, sheer pleasure is being experienced by the people at Dax's fun party.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Atoa from one of the Federation starships is there doing a Pacific Island fire dance routine, which is really setting this crowd on fire. Like, people are going fucking ape watching this.
It's exhilarating to watch people watch him.
Yeah. He's fucking great, and the performance was really cool and fun. But the way they're reacting is like, oh my God, I can't fucking believe it. Which is like, So we talk about all the time, like all of the like crazy sci-fi scenarios that people walk into.
Where they should respond like it's street magic.
Yeah. And it's fun to actually see that on Star Trek.
Yeah. You get a Dax react here.
Yeah. And it's like, it's something that you can see if you go on vacation in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And it's fun to see aliens reacting like that to something that we have access to here on Earth in the present day.
The only downside to seeing Lieutenant Atoa shirtless in this scene is that you don't get to see what he looks like wearing a service uniform.
Yeah.
Which has got to be positively like Cal Hudson-esque. How low is his comm badge, you think?
Oh, man. Atoa is wearing it like below his waist.
I mean, missed opportunity there. I would have liked to have known that, Lieutenant Atoa.
Yeah.
Ben, he's from the Sutherland. You remember the Sutherland, right?
Remind me.
That was the Del Sol class starship that Data was the captain of briefly.
No kidding.
Remember when he had his exo Christopher Hobson talking all that shit to him?
Yeah.
You don't give a damn about the people whose lives you're throwing away.
Talking back, being a real bad exo, and they had to do that blockade of
tachyon grid to stop the ROMs.
That's the same ship.
No kidding.
And they also, real casually, threw out the name Captain Shelby.
Wow.
As if that might have been her stop.
No kidding.
You got to give the Sutherland to Shelby, right?
Yeah. I bet Shelby's doing great during this Dominion War.
I think she's better than a Del Sol class, though.
Got to start somewhere, right?
She has no chill for a hood, though.
Like,
you cannot put her on a foosball class starship.
I mean, Picard is better than a Stargazer class starship, but he had to start there.
Yeah, it's true. Everyone is so vibing with the Fire Dancer, like, their expressions are of total joy and amazement, except the very expressionless mask of Morn, who is the only one who knows what it's like to swing a stick around that long.
Morn even has some experience with a stick that is on fire.
Right. He grabs a Toa's fire stick and he's like, that's all you're working with?
On guard. While all this is going on, some other people are experiencing fire in a different way. That's Bashir and O'Brien, who are handcuffed to a pole that is they are dangling from over another brazier. And that's not a bra, Adam.
Okay, thanks.
That's a bowl with fire in it.
They're just hanging in there, Ben.
Yeah, just hanging there, babies.
Hey, you know what? There's a great merch idea that Star Trek will never make, much like your great idea for a car sunshade.
Yeah.
That depicts the shuttlecraft with Data and Geordi inside. That should be made. Wouldn't you like to see an office with a hang in there poster?
With O'Brien and Bashir? Yeah. Why won't the Star Trek industrial complex listen to our ideas?
They'd have to listen to the show.
Yeah. Well, that's just a brief moment, and we cut back to the party where the 5-0 have shown up on a noise complaint.
I've been getting complaints about the noise.
Kira calls some rank to keep the party going, and this is when she and Odo sort of notice that they have accidentally come into contact with each other.
It's unavoidable.
It's unavoidable now, so... Kira takes a let's rip the band-aid off approach to this.
Yeah.
Which is never my move. You know, if I'm at a party and I'm really having a great time,
yeah.
The bummer conversation that I know is inevitable is not the first thing I want to do.
You want that band-aid if you're Ben Harrison to just come off in the night while you're sleeping.
Yeah, or maybe in the shower.
Yeah.
You don't feel it that way.
In a public pool.
Yeah.
It just sloughs off and you don't even notice it.
Hot tub at an Airbnb.
All the great places for a Band-Aid to come off. Certainly not by your own volition.
So they go shut themselves into their storage closet.
Got to say, I really love off-duty Kira here. Just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, it's a good look.
Like it a lot.
Dax and Lieutenant Atoa are kind of canoodling on a love seat in the middle of this party when Sorella walks in and...
Aren't you going to put down some, like, newspapers or something when Atoa sits on your couch? I mean...
You think he's got, like, spray tan on or something?
No, I think he's covered in sweat.
You just throw that couch out the airlock and replicate a new one.
That's right. You're always going to have a fresh couch on DS9.
Yeah, that's one of the brand promises of the Deep Space Nine hospitality business. This turns into an entire party of dropped jaws... As Sorella retracts the offer to marry a member of her family, and then they get in a knife-on-fist fight.
You can't bring a fist to a knife fight.
I'll never forget the knife fight that my wife got into with my mom a couple of days before our wedding.
It feels like we skipped something here, though, right? Like, this is one of those moments where the last time we saw Dax, she was having that conversation with Sorella, which disputed her family line. And then we cut to the party, but I feel like something's missing in between. Like, is she done with the test?
Yeah.
Is the party part of the test?
It doesn't seem like the party's part of the test, especially because Sorella's not invited.
Right.
And... it does seem like Sorella suspects Dax of being unfaithful with right. Lieutenant Atoa.
Which doesn't look totally wrong. I mean...
No, it seems like Dax is definitely like...
It looks like the basement is a little flooded.
Yeah. She's definitely like talking to him like he's just a piece of ass that she wants to keep around for a little while.
Right.
And then the next morning, like...
His pips could be for her pleasure.
Yeah. And then the next morning, it's Atoa and Morn leaving her apartment, which... Yeah. Begs the question, Adam, did Dax have a three-way with Lieutenant Atoa and Morn?
All right. I'm really, really racking my brain about this.
And also, like, they're leaving when Worf comes in, and Worf does one of those, like, not again kind of shrugs. Right? So, like, do they have the kind of open relationship where Dax can... explore this aspect of her sexuality openly?
I am going to say yes. Yes, she did.
Wow.
She most definitely did.
So Worf is not that traditional after all.
No.
She's got a raging hangover. She's got a real bastard behind the eyes and doesn't want to talk to Worf about
the fact that she's been forbidden to join the House of Martok.
I'm sad that Dax doesn't go for a hypo spray and then her hangover is gone.
Yeah.
Hangovers are still a thing in the 24th century. Give me a break.
Yeah. I'm rereading an Ian M. Banks novel right now called Accession, and there's a character in it that wakes up with a hangover, and he has like enough machinery and like stuff in his head that he can theoretically turn it off, but he's so hungover that he's like, I don't even want to bother like messing with it.
Wow.
So maybe it's that kind of situation.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I think this is a kind of acting a lot like act drunk, where I don't think you really realize how much it takes to act hungover until you have to do it.
Yeah.
And she does a great job here.
Yeah, I bought it.
Morn. Dear sweet. Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Perhaps the most interesting thing that happens in this episode happens entirely off camera, because they realize that there are voices and they open the door to Dax's storage locker or something.
Bathroom,
maybe.
I don't know.
There's like Rubbermaid tubs in there that Odo and Kira are sitting on.
Mm.
But they have had one of those just amazing nights where you leave the party with somebody and you just talk all night.
God, those are the best.
They're the best. I mean, they ain't got shit on the ones where you leave and fuck all night. But
right. Don't have shit on that. Misery.
It sort of seems like Kira and Odo are like togethersies.
Just an almost unforgivable writing maneuver here by a show that loves to lean into how it resolves conflicts.
Yeah.
To do this off camera, I can't even be mad at it. I'm just shocked that they don't take the opportunity, because it's a show and a group of writers that just fucking relishes this so much.
Right.
Why remove the opportunity to do that?
I don't get it.
Yeah.
The scene ends with Worf saying, like, you've got to go, like, hands and knees and beg for one more chance from Sirella. That's the only way.
I have smelled Morn's dick. You have acted with great dishonor. It took me 40 minutes to smell the length of Morn's dick.
Dax has too much pride.
I don't beg.
Wedding off, and it feels easy. Feels easy to say this is over.
Yeah, and then what we get here is a pretty classic DS9 montage of the both of them walking the promenade. The single brass instrument of a dissolved wedding.
Yeah.
Plays. They are like food doesn't look like it tastes good.
Yeah.
They like Dax looks at a bouquet of flowers, like is sort of isn't even interested. Like there are kids playing, like, yeah. That doesn't give her joy.
Worf is looking in the window at the Batleth store and doesn't care about the Batleths.
What's the point?
Doesn't want one.
Yeah.
In Quark's bar, O'Brien and Bashir are still in their gear for the bachelor party, and they watch as Quark starts to disassemble the decorations, and they find out that the wedding is off, and so the first thing they do is put in an order for some food.
Double altar sandwich, no mustard. Two bowls of linguine, Bajoran shrimp with extra cheese.
Two big pizzas, man. Everything on them with water, whole lot of water, and onions.
Time to break that fast.
I like that their order isn't Star Trek food. It looks like,
yeah,
it looks like stuff I'd want to eat right now.
Bashir got stuff I would want to eat. O'Brien did not.
Because O'Brien got a sandwich?
Yeah. God. Why would you break a fast with a sandwich?
It looks like a great big meaty sandwich. It looks good.
That steak looks so much better, though.
I didn't understand the pasta with Alfredo sauce with non-melted cheese on top.
Yeah.
Also, of all the pastas, Alfredo?
I ordered a hamburger at a hotel in Ethiopia.
Ben's gonna talk about Africa.
It tasted nothing like a hamburger. It was twice the size of the biggest hamburger I've ever seen. And it was like somebody in that kitchen saw a photograph of a hamburger and made this based on what they imagine it might be.
Mm.
Like the bread was a weird kind of bread. It was maybe 2 pounds of beef in the patty. I couldn't believe that they, like, it had all of the ingredients, but somehow were put together in a way that it was like, this tastes like nothing. It doesn't, it's like a simulacrum of a hamburger by somebody that doesn't know what a hamburger is.
This tastes like nothing to me.
Yeah. And it was like, I can understand that because this is like their culture has like such a vastly different version of cuisine from mine.
Why even then?
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, you could forgive a guy that eats tube grubs and drinks Beetlejuice for like not knowing that the cheese should be melted on the pasta.
I understand now. That was a long walk, but when we got to the end, I get it.
Yeah.
Epiphany.
Martek comes aboard the Little D to try and convince Worf to not fuck this up. He does the classic relationship advice thing of making it about himself, making it about how much he loves Sirella and how their marriage, you know, doesn't work on paper, but we can't help the women we fall in love with.
I never knew before this episode how much of a fucking bro Martok is. He's a total bro.
Yeah, the backward baseball cap didn't tip you off?
Both in this scene and the scene before, but especially this scene. I love how it's composed, first of all. This is one unbroken shot that starts on Worf. It rack focuses a bit, and then it goes into a sequence. We move back, and we push into Martok's face.
Yeah, it is a very, very long push-in that gets real tight by the end. Like, it goes from two-shot to ECU.
Lots of times when you get scenes like this, you get one character getting a monologue. But in this scene, both of them have a monologue in one uncut sequence.
Yeah.
Thought it was really well done.
Yeah, it was good.
Martok's "you fucked up, buddy" speech.
But how hollow is the sound of victory without someone to share it with?
Does kind of rally Worf into becoming a fighter for this thing. Like, Worf enumerates all of the ways that they're terrible for each other, he and Dax.
Yeah.
But the conclusion ultimately, and this is a feeling that they both share, is that it's better to be miserable with someone than it is to be alone.
Yeah.
So we've come back after like 30 seconds of crickets there.
Yeah.
As you and I really think about that concept.
Yeah. Well, we trimmed it out because the listener's time is valuable to us. So Martok comes into Quark's bar and takes the food away from O'Brien and Bashir just before they make a huge mistake because
food's back, not on the menu, boys.
Why don't we not eat them? They're not made out of meat.
So the wedding's back on. And they're bummed, but they're willing to stick it out for Worf. And Worf comes in, and then it's back to, no, like, it's over. It's I talked to Dax, and she's not in. And then Sisko has to go talk to her.
Our main characters are like, what the fuck? Come on.
Pick something.
This is a dangerous moment in the writer's room, I think.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing now is conflating the professional with the personal.
Mm-hmm.
You're sending Captain Sisko in to advise and counsel a subordinate on what she should or should not do, W/R/T, getting married.
Yeah, to another one of your subordinates.
Yeah, and the appeal that he makes to her feels pretty gross to me.
If it means you have to bow down and kiss her boots, that's exactly what you have to do.
Like the suck it up and deal?
Yeah, he's basically on team go begging on all fours.
It rang hollow to me coming from a character who has represented, you know, independent thinking. But at the same time, like the longer I think about it, like if anyone is going to be orthodox anything, it's going to be the Sisko, right? He's going to be the one that's most interested in preserving religious or cultural norms like these. Like, is that where this is coming from? Because if you don't look at it that way, I think it's a character departure that is a super bad look for him.
Like, he's telling her to eat her pride, and it feels like kind of two pieces of advice that are in conflict with each other, because he's saying, like, grow up and act your age, which is 300-something.
Yeah.
But also, recognize that this lady is like your senior in this family, and so you have to like supplicate yourself to her to win her back. And they it seems like two totally incompatible ideas to hold in your head at the same time.
Right.
But I don't know. Yeah, like I think that it's an interesting character moment for them because like they do have this like super old friendship that is founded on two different lifetimes for Dax. So I guess it rings true to me. It was surprising. But it didn't feel like this doesn't make any sense.
I was waiting for that shoe to drop that goes like, look, Dax, all you have to do is pretend for Sorella and Martok.
Yeah.
You don't have to believe any of this shit. Like, manipulate her for a minute, it'll be over, and then you'll be married, and then that's what it's all about. Like, prize on the eyeball. Like, get married. That's what it's about. This is a temporary inconvenience with all this shit eating, but that's not what Captain Sisko's saying. He's saying, shit and mean it.
Yeah, like, we had a struggle early in my relationship, which is that I go to a lot of Jewish religious ceremonies with my wife and her family, and, you know, there's all kinds of situations where there's, like, a song being sung or a prayer being said that is not, you know, it's not native to me, so I don't know them by heart, and I also feel a little uncomfortable, like an interloper. And part of it is that I'm not a religious person, and part of it is that I feel slightly disrespectful doing the thing that is important to them.
Yeah.
And we went to this secular Jewish organization, and they had like a little like meeting group about like how to handle the holidays in mixed couples. And one of the things they said that was like a total liberating thought technology to me was like, yeah, like, I mean, you don't believe it, so saying it is actually like an act of respect to them because you're like participating in the thing that they would like to bring you in to participate with. Mm-hmm. And for you, like, that can be the entire meaning of the words, because like, if the words are about talking to a God you don't believe in, like, then you're not talking to anyone, and you can kind of infuse them with its own meaning.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you're saying, like that's the advice you would give Dax, but that is not the advice Sisko gives Dax.
Yeah.
Like, we don't get the begging on the knees scene. Presumably it happens.
This is the second scene that I feel like is missing, because you never get the interaction between Dax and Sorella. We cut to the ceremony.
Yeah, and if you were worried that we weren't going to get a boob window in this episode, worry no longer.
Such a relief.
Yeah, Sorella's still in the... She doesn't dress up or down. She has one mode. Yeah. So she's in the same thing for the wedding that she was for everything else.
Yeah.
But Dax comes in full Klingon wedding regalia and boob window.
Boob window.
That's how the Klingons roll.
Yep.
Did Sorella have a boob window at her wedding?
You gotta believe that.
I saw Lita in the crowd looking at that boob window and being like, wow. Kind of wish we'd gone with more of a Klingon thing for our wedding.
Yeah.
I really liked the Klingon wedding ceremony.
I did too. This is a very patiently constructed scene.
Yeah.
It really gives us all of the beats and the moments and the call and response. And
this scene might be why other scenes aren't in the episode, because it's pretty long.
Yeah.
And I've heard of people having Klingon weddings like in real life before and wondered what that even means. And if it's this, like if this is like the service that they're drawing from, like it's not for me, but I could kind of see it being really meaningful to the right kind of couple, you know?
Yeah.
Then let all present here today know that this man and this woman are married.
You get someone who really values a boob window. It's going to be a beautiful ceremony.
Yeah, and then you get your friends to run on stage with Q-tips and...
The end of this episode, Ben. Oh, my God.
It's like Butch Cassidy and Sundance running out into the...
It really is.
...hail of gunfire.
Bashir and O'Brien are like, can we do it, Dad? Can we do it? And Martok's like, not now, damn it. Until it is time.
No, Doctor!
Yeah.
And then it's cut to black, L-edit style. Like, we hear the sock'em bobbers happen over the credits.
It's so funny.
What the fuck?
You really want to do this here, now? Okay, let's do it, do it.
Did you like the episode?
This episode is insane.
This is the work of a mad person.
This is like too neat of a comparison, but it's like if you... People do Klingon opera. Like, you can go and watch that.
Yeah.
People perform Klingon things.
Yes.
You can go see Klingon improv or Klingon Friends or whatever version of the thing that you like as performed by Klingons.
Yeah.
And the idea of this being the very special episode of a TV show is frequently the wedding of two main characters. You get this all the time.
I was ready for there to be a reception scene where Kira and Odo announce that they've gotten engaged, and like, and then Dax is pissed because she took the thunder from her big day.
It is just incredibly silly. And I don't think the episode takes itself that seriously, and so I don't take it that seriously.
Yeah.
There are things to like for its silliness. But the things that are tough have real consequences, like the Kira and Odo thing. Are we just going to get back to business next week, not knowing anything about how they made things right? You know what? Setting that aside, Odo is going about his business this episode being treated normally by everyone else except Kira. Why is that?
Yeah. Do they not know?
How does everyone who's wearing a Bajoran uniform working for Odo not look at him with a fucking perma-scowl at being complicit in what he was with over the last 8 episodes? I really hope there's more about that. I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
And I wonder if an episode like this is the moment that they had that they didn't take the opportunity with. So... I like the episode for what it was, and I don't like it for what it wasn't, if that is a way to put it.
Yeah. At the end of the last episode, I was thinking a lot about that 6 episodes as the open of a season, and the fact that there were going to be 20 more episodes. Like, it was such a breathless 6 episodes, and this feels like a stop and pause for breath, and I'm into it for that reason. Like, I kind of think that, like, maybe part of this is the fact that we're also, you know, like, as of this recording, coming right to the end of a 10-episode season of Star Trek Picard, and so much shit happens in every episode at this point in that show that it feels, like, insane to have built the kind of pace that you have at episode 6 of season 6 of Deep Space Nine and then be like, hey, let's do one that's just for fun.
Yeah.
You know? But I liked it, I think, on balance.
All right. Well, let's see if we've got any priority one messages that we might like in the can.
That is a good idea.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, here's a priority one message from Andrew and many, many multitudes of others, and it's to Ben and Adam. That's us.
Hmm.
It goes like this. Dear sirs, you are beautiful. Full stop.
You're beautiful. That's nice.
Yeah. Oh, wow. They asked for this P1 to be up against anything but Resurrection, which I guess is an episode title. I guess that's next week's episode, actually. So
wow. All right.
Narrowly got it in under the wire.
Good job.
If you'd like to get one in under the wire, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message, and it's $200 for a commercial message. And we really appreciate it. Helps us keep the lights on around here.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. Everybody is turning up at Dax's party. But I don't think anyone turns up quite as much as Rom. Rom is flipping out when he sees this fire dance going on. And
aren't Ferengi afraid of fire also? Isn't that what we know from TNG?
Yeah. Quark got his pants caught on fire that one time when he went camping with...
Right.
...with Sisko and, for some reason, Jake. So, I don't know. Rom fucking loves it.
Yeah.
Rom's turned it into a sexual interest. from the look of it.
I really do love a fully choreographed dance scene, and it's not just the fire dancer here. Like, the way the people dance together in this episode is a lot of fun.
Super fun. Did you have a drunk Shimoda, Adam?
I don't know if it's possible for me to give it to the ending of the episode. But, like, everything about the last 5 seconds of the episode feels feels like a Shimoda to me.
Yeah.
It is totally self-aware. It is having a ton of fun.
Indeed.
I guess if I'm going to give it, like, I'll split it between, like, if it's got to be characters, I'd give it to O'Brien and Bashir.
Yeah. Gotta get that.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusa today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi. This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Gotta get that gold press lighter. Get that gold press lighter.
Platinum. Gold press lighter. To our Yamak songs. There's no way we have a silly episode on deck for next time, Ben, but we need to find out what that episode will be and how we are going to experience the recap of it. For that, we go to gach.biz/game and our game of buttholes, The Will of the Prophets.
The episode in question is season 6, episode 8, Resurrection. The alternate universe double of Kira's slain love requests asylum on Deep Space Nine.
The Did you just say the double of Kira's slain love requests asylum?
Is that going to be Vedic Barile?
Yeah, like that's, I'm wondering which of her loves that could be. I'm back and I'm boring, baby.
Maybe since he's from the Mirror Universe, he's the opposite of boring. He's extremely interesting.
Whoa. It's the Barile we've always wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the Dos Equis edition of Barile.
How about that? Catsuit Barile.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at our game of Buttholes Will of the Prophets, where currently our runabout is on square 29. In the deep distance, there is a measure of a man square, but nothing really to worry about before that.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I'm going to roll the die.
To measure the man, you start at the anus.
Yeah, that's a graphic that we couldn't put. I mean, we have enough space buttholes on on the game board. We can't just...
It would get confusing.
We can't just put an anus on it. I have rolled, and I have rolled a 6, so it is a regular old episode.
All right, a regular old episode for next week. Well, I am looking very much forward to that.
Yeah.
So that will be next week. In the meantime, please, if you're in a position to, head to MaximumFun.org/join if you would like to support the ongoing production of the show.
Podcasts, please make sure that they continue to survive.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I think that inevitably a lot of the folks out there are going to be getting hit pretty hard by this thing, and we are definitely thinking about y'all, and you know, I think it sort of remains to be seen what this means for us, but hopefully if you are still in an okay place, you're able to support us, maybe make up for some of the fall off of folks who stop being able to. That would be great, and we would really appreciate it.
Thinking a lot about our good friends at DeSoto right now. Among them, we've got Adam Ragusea, who has created the interstitial music for our show and done a good bit of kit bashing of the original music made by Dark Materia.
Yeah, got to thank our homeboy Bill Tilly, who makes hilarious trading cards about every episode of the show. He posts them on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen on his account, BillTilly1973. Adam is over there at Cut for Time, and I'm on there at Benjamin AHR.
There are so many groups on social media dedicated to this show and its many aspects, and they're mobilizing.
Yeah.
They're mobilizing, and they're doing good things right now, and I think it would be a great idea if you were on places like Facebook or Twitter to link up with them and try to do some good at this very moment.
Or Reddit. If you're hungry for community, it's out there waiting for you. And they're, through no fault of our own, just really great groups of people that are doing really great things. So we appreciate all of you, and we need each other in times like this.
Sure do. And I'm glad we've got you.
Yeah.
So with that being said, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that doesn't remember liking you as much as we do right now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.